Welcome to House of Comments. I'm Charlotte Henry. She's Emma Bernal.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. How are you?
I'm good. You had a busy budget day.
I was on the BBC, which is always very nice.
Quite good.
And then I was also running around like a lunatic because I had to go and dog sit for a while for my folks.
Yes, and I saw your assessment put out by you for the Fabians as well. And the budget, we'll all cut. We're going to come to all of that.
Indeed. And also I was working at the theatre last night. So that's really nice.
Very nice too. So you did have a busy day. We're going to come to all of that apart from maybe the theatre. But we obviously will unpack what there was in the budget, which is a contestable term anyway. But we want to start with something a little bit different, which a story that is potentially disappearing because of the budget. I mean, you know, there are stories about it, but I think it's fair to say it's not got the attention it would have in a non-budget week, which is that the science secretary, which is Michelle Donnellan, made a quite extraordinary claim about a academic who'd been put forward for a fairly prominent role, that they were a supporter of Hamas. Now, we should say this is very much not true of this academic. The academic in question is Professor Kate Sang. From everything that I could tell, she is not a supporter of Hamas. And given that Hamas is a proscribed organisation in the United Kingdom, that is a very serious allegation to make. It is a particularly serious allegation to make in a letter that you publish to your Twitter account. Which is where a lot of this escalated. And the long and the short of it is that this was considered ultimately defamatory, and the department has had to stump up £15,000 in legal costs to make this go away. Now, you will be shocked to know I am not a legal expert. But I read a very excellent article on Prospect by the lawyer David Alan Green on all this, who explained why this might have become the department's problem. Not surprising, it's annoyed quite a lot of people in the public that the taxpayers stumped out for this statement from Michelle Donnellan. It was a rather stupid thing to say, wasn't it?
Well, A, it was a very stupid thing to say, and particularly a stupid thing to tweet.
Sorry to interrupt, but from reading this David Alan Green article, that seems to be where the core of the problem is, because there are some protections for government departmental letters.
If she just sent the letter, then there could have been a quiet response.
Right.
And it doesn't UKRI, have the same, which is the body that she was being appointed to a subcommittee of, could have said, okay, we will investigate. And it probably would have been quietly investigated and gone, no, this is bullshit. Let's carry on with our lives.
Yeah.
Michelle Donnellan did not write that letter because she particularly cared about this issue, was particularly intense. She wrote that letter in order to tweet it. And she wrote that letter in order to tweet it because she thought this was part of the Conservatives' ongoing essential culture war against academics. And it doesn't matter really whether this was about accusing someone of being a supporter of Hamas or accusing somebody of many of the other things. The government have a broad brush culture war against academia, and Michelle Donnellan saw her opportunity to raise her profile in that particular arena and earn herself some brownie points with the worst Conservative nutters.
That's certainly one interpretation. I certainly get the argument you're making. Like, I get it. We've seen, I think you're right to identify there's some cultural issues.
There's a perfectly reasonable space if she had genuinely thought, she was wrong. But even if she was wrong in private, that would have been a different matter. That she chose to do this in public was a different choice. There are probably hundreds of letters sent every week.
And of course, had she said it in Parliament, there would have been no consequences.
If she said it in Parliament, there'd been no consequence because of parliamentary privilege. But that wasn't what she was interested in.
Yeah, I mean, I totally get all the points you're making. I don't know about her or her agenda well enough to know that's true, but I certainly get the point you're making. It just seems like... It just seems like such a mess to get yourself into on such a sensitive thing. Like, you should... I think I said this before, actually, when we've discussed a variety of things. There needs to be a bit of decorum if you're a cabinet minister. You know, we're dealing with very contentious, upsetting things. You can't just bandy around this stuff like it's okay.
No, and I think... I think this story has potentially a lot more legs than it's currently given credence to. And I'll tell you for why.
Please.
We're paying for it. The public, it's not a huge amount in the grand scheme of government spending, but it is an amount that the public can grasp. £15,000 or a good new car, right?
Sure, yeah.
Tangible amount that the public are being charged because this woman chose to be stupid in public. And she chose to be stupid in public because her calculation was that lack of decorum was better for her politically. And I don't think the public are going to go, I think she calculated her lack of decorum was better for her politically.
No.
I don't think that's what I mean. What I mean is that the public are going to go, why the bloody hell are we paying for these people to be idiots?
Yeah, I think
people are idiots, why the bloody hell aren't they paying for the consequences of that themselves?
Yes.
And I think if you look at where the public really, really takes umbrage, it isn't always in the biggest amounts of money.
No.
But it is where... The most egregious examples of one rule for them and one rule for the rest of us. Partygate, Michelle Moan, the post office scandal. One rule for them, one rule for the rest of us. And that's where I think this has got the potential to be really quite emblematic of government decay.
Well, I think that's a very fair point because, first of all, to most of us, 15 grand sounds like a lot of money because it is.
Exactly.
Second,
what I couldn't do with 15 grand right now.
Quite so. If you want to send us 15 grand, patreon.com/houseofcommentspodcast. But
even accept £5 a month, we're not that greedy.
No, but joking aside, first of all, 15 grand sounds like a lot of money because it is. Second of all, people are not going to read a very eloquent David Alan Green legal assessment about why the department probably had to pay for it. It just sounds like someone getting away with the stupid thing without getting hurt in the pocket themselves.
One rule for them, one rule for the rest
of us.
Well,
I think it does sound a bit like that. And that is always a problem. That is always a problem.
Yeah, it's ultimately what kills off most political governments is when they're seen as so far out of touch that one rule for them, one rule for the rest of us. Look at end of the new Labour government parliamentary expenses scandal, basically biggest nail in their coffin. One rule for them.
Even though it was all parties. Even though it was all parties.
It was all parties, but there was one party in charge.
Correct.
That they then bore the brunt of that blame. Look at the end of the major government. Endless sleaze, cash for questions, people behaving very, very badly. One rule for them, one rule for the rest of us. I mean, this is just how... I mean, these things have to come along with other things, but it is actually, you can see that this is more often than not one of the things that kills off governments.
Yes. Yes. And it's, even if it doesn't kill off governments, it can often end a ministerial career. It was just like, it's just a dumb thing to do. You sent me over a story. I had missed this and I'm glad you flagged it up to me because it's sort of a it's an ongoing theme for
Sister
Eli.
story.
It certainly is a at least a cousin. A university challenge student called Malika Gorgiano has taken what's quoted in the BBC story as substantial damages from the conservative peer Baroness Jacqueline Foster, because she falsely accused this university challenge contestant of being anti-Semitic. Now, I, as again, I'm going to repeat myself and I don't care. Like, the accusation of anti-Semitism is very serious. It means really specific things. And to devalue it, like, you should call out anti-Semitism. To devalue it and just randomly say it helps the Jewish community not one iota.
And this poor young girl who's got, the dream of her life, she's going on University
Yeah.
Challenge at that age. That must have been amazing. It was filmed in May last year, I think. April, most certainly spring last year, long before October the 7th, long before
War, yeah.
the Hamas Israeli war. She was not wearing the colours of the Palestinian flag. And even if she
Right.
were, that's not illegal.
And it's argu
And
it's
then
not, I was going to say argument, it is not anti-Semitic in and of
it's
itself.
not at all, and it's also, frankly, not anti-Semitic to even wrap yourself in the Palestinian flag. It's more complicated, particularly at the moment, because it
Sure.
can feel that way in terms of the perception. But and finally, octopuses, not anti-Semitic. Octopuses used in very specific ways in certain cartoons, very anti-Semitic. Octopuses as a whole, not anti-Semitic.
Octopi, my dear.
Oh, shut up.
So just in case you don't quite know what we're banging on about, the often on university challenger teams have mascot, like soft toy or something is their mascot. The team, this girl, and we should point out she is a hijabi. She's wearing a headscarf and a head covering. That she was had an octopus as a mascot, as Emma was hinting at in like Nazi propaganda and posters, they often depicted Jewish people as octopi. Look, she that's not what was going on here, was it?
No, and it's just so, as you said at the beginning of this conversation, it's not helpful to Jewish people if we overreach on everything and lump, because then you make it much, much harder when real accusations of anti-Semitism are made, and everyone goes, well, you just,
You call
look
everything.
at that other one that silly woman made. It's all the same.
So exactly. I mean, there's so many different bits of it that are horrible out of this story. One, because they just saw this young hijabi girl and made this accusation
And
with no
if
basis.
that outfit had been on anybody else, none of this would have happened.
I think that's probably true, yeah. So it's just really, the teams on university challenge have all sorts of creatures with as their mascots. I mean,
And all sorts of fashion choices, frankly.
it's a nonsense. There's a whole energy company called Octopus. I mean, for goodness
I think
sake.
I'm with them at the moment.
Right. It's just a nut. Well,
I mean, to be fair, they may be evil and running the world, but
what does
that's a
that
different
say? What
matter.
does that say about you, Emma?
It says that I was with Shell and it got randomly bought out.
The problem that we have with so many topics at the moment, and we are seeing this with the debate about the war in Gaza, but it's reflected in all sorts of ways, that everything becomes like a team sport. Everything becomes very binary.
And everything goes when things become like a team sport. Like the way that people behave at the football is not a way that they behave in other circumstances. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I've never done such things at football, obviously. I'm impeccably behaved.
I don't believe you for a second.
Well, I'm sending the lawyers in because that is defamatory as well.
No, I was expressing the truth of my belief.
Oh my goodness. Look, we're joking aside, and I'm sort of pleased we are. And in some ways, I think you and I joking reflects the ridiculousness of the two accusations we've discussed. But if you're a public figure, I mean, you have to do this anyway, but if you're a public figure, you have to behave yourself. You can't just.
Well, ironically, if you read the letter, she refers to the Nolan principles.
This is the Michelle Donnellan letter.
The Michelle Donnellan letter. She refers to the Nolan principles of standards in public life. Well, Michelle, you might want to reacquaint yourself with those.
I mean, for goodness sake. Anyway, right, we've put it off long enough. Let's do the budget. I believe the word you texted me was nothing burger.
Indeed.
And to some extent, I can't really disagree with that, because the one thing that was of some significance is that there's going to be a 2p cut in VAT.
No, national insurance.
So, national insurance, sorry, thank you. Yes, national insurance. And there is a plan, ultimately, we have since learned, to scrap national insurance.
There's not a plan. I mean, don't fall down the Tory rabbit hole of saying things are a plan when they're not a plan.
Well, we're going to come to that, because yes, I slightly ran out of scratchings about how many times we heard the word plan. So there's that. I am amazed that we didn't see Jeremy Hunt getting a bollocking from Sir Lindsay Hoyle or Dame Eleanor Lang about the pre-briefing. I don't know if the Speaker and his deputies have just given up trying to stop politicians pre-briefing.
I think it's partly that, and partly they're just... If you were Lindsay Hoyle right at this moment, you'd keep your head down, wouldn't you?
It's a very fair point. So there's that. But let's go into the sort of substance of it. We've discussed that, you know, the 2p cut in national insurance, which, you know, it will help some people, it will do something. But of course, what we start to see, as is inevitable, is there's a bit of giving with one hand and taking away with another. And, you know, the stuff around income tax bans in particular seems to just be shifting people into paying more income tax. Or am I missing something?
No, I mean, that the fiscal drag is absolutely going to completely wash out any gains that people might have made from this budget. So it's all very well for them to say, we've given you 900 extra pounds a year to the average family. I'm not sure if that means it's 450 pounds per person. They assume everyone's married or not. Anyway, but it is, that is not discounting the amounts that the average family is losing, both in terms of how much they lose because everything costs more. And I assume if an awful lot of things cost more, their VAT take goes up. So that's another increase in tax that Treasury is taking off us.
Yeah, I don't know the numbers.
I mean, 20% of a bigger number is
20%
of
a bigger number.
Is a bigger number. I mean, my maths ain't great, but I know that.
Sure.
But also, because they've raised the thresholds at which you pay, frozen the thresholds at which
yes.
you pay certain levels of income tax. And of course, pay is going up. So the thresholds are not going up at the same pace as pay is going up, even though pay is only finally going up properly. Done for a decade and a half. We're still on average earning less in real
2008,
terms
I heard.
Than we were in 2008, yeah.
Before the 2008 crash, which I found a staggering figure to hear.
But pay has gone up on average between 5 and 6%, I think, depending on which sector you're in. And that means that some people will fall more rapidly into the
higher tax
band. Paying a higher tax band. And sometimes if you literally just fall over that line, it means your take-home pay decreases.
Right. Yes. If you go, I can't remember the bands, but yes, if you just fall over the line, and there's all these anomalies as well, which they never fix and didn't get fixed in this budget around household numbers. So you can be a household that actually earns 100 grand and do better on child benefit than a single parent earning 60 or something. Do you know what I mean? Because
yeah,
you've tipped over the line. But
so I think they did fix that on one particular thank you. I think it might have been family benefits.
Okay.
I think they did fix one particular anomaly, but not across the piece. Yeah.
There's a bit. There is a wonky thing with child benefit where you can sort of both be earning, and you end up, your household could be earning a lot of money, and there, but the person who an individual, like a single parent, would lose their child benefit for clearing a threshold, but a household might be earning more than the threshold and would keep the benefit, basically.
So that I think have even that out. The issue with child benefit, particularly because of universal credit, and one of the things that made it also tricky is that child benefit was always given to the mother.
Indeed. For very good reason.
For very good reason. And that is really hard under universal credit. And it was one of the reasons that universal credit was really hard to implement. So I'm not quite sure. I mean, I don't know enough about the technical details of how these things work, but that will be one of the things that I'll need to have ironed out.
There's really interesting narrative that I read on the newsletter from Graham Ruddock, which is called Off to Lunch, which basically is saying that actually for once it was millennials, not pensioners, who did well out of this budget. Huge cheer. So there's, for example, he cites information from the IFS and the Resolution Foundation showing this, which is very interesting.
Yeah, so, I believe that's true. I mean, I don't think anyone benefited massively, but I think, and I don't think anyone lost massively. Like, it's not like there's been a huge transfer of wealth to pensioners to young people.
No. So, oh, thank you for saying I'm still young. So there was the Resolution Foundation, for example, put out a tweet that said the budget has moved support away from pensioners towards millennials, i.e. people born from 1981 to like 1996 or something, isn't it?
I'm a Gen Xer.
And this is ripe for a country where generational progress has stalled, they said. A household headed by an 18 to 45-year-old will gain £590, while a pensioner household will lose £770.
Why would they lose that? Where are they losing it from? I mean, is that there overall?
It was overall various calculations. Okay. I can see things around everything from fuel duty to every element in the budget.
Oh, my God. Can we stop?
Oh, no. What have I done?
Calling it a temporary freeze if you've frozen it for 14 years in a row. I'm sorry, Charlotte, but I'm temporarily 35.
Oh, I'm temporarily 25.
I mean, fuck off. Temporary my arse.
So we've got all that going on, which is kind of interesting. And I'm slightly surprised. Perhaps now I'm thinking out loud, I'm not surprised that they didn't try and make more of this. I guess they want to help millennials without really annoying or outwardly annoying pensioners, I guess.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're a Tory, you don't want to outwardly annoy pensioners because they're the only people still voting for you.
Right. But I think there is a thing, and this is probably time for another show, particularly as we head towards the election, where I think millennials have sort of been squeezed out quite a lot. You know, there's all the stuff we could talk about boomers and pensioners and all of that. Okay, fine. And then people are realizing that the generation below me have had a really hard time, and like particularly the pandemic triggered attempts at support for that. And then somewhere in the middle was my lot. And
my lot, actually. You're not wrong. I can't talk about it yet, but there's some very interesting research coming out next month that I will talk to you about in more detail, where basically shows that people who are now between the ages of 55 and 65 are at the brunt of a lot of things, and people too often lump them in with baby boomers.
Interesting. Well, we will come to all. I think generational unfairness is going to be a big theme of the election, so we can certainly come to that at a later point. What did you think of Jeremy Hunt's presentation? I thought he did okay. He's not the most, fluid performer. He's fine.
He's a Surrey Tory with not a lot going for him. He's the man who once hid behind a tree. That I remember that detail is because there's not an awful lot else to remember about him.
The jokes were mostly okay for what they were, for the context of like a politician in parliament.
Yeah, there was an awful lot of pointed jokes, particularly at Angela Rayner. There was a very, very interesting Substack by Tom Hamilton, which I highly recommend people read, about what it means when the Tories go on attack on people, particularly like Angela. And it's because an awful lot of internal Tory fundraising is done with the image of Angela Rayner on it.
Oh, how interesting.
She clearly both gets their Tory heckles going and thus opens up the coffers. But equally, they worry about her. She's someone they find it hard to land a blow on, particularly. She is popular. When you hear people talk about her in focus groups, she's often one of the ones that's singled out as, yes, she's good, she is. Mm. Says it like it is, down to earth, la, la, la. And then there's been this slight kerfuffle about should she or should she not. Nobody seems to actually be able to give you a straight answer on whether she should or should have not paid more money on this thing. Apparently she's gone back and asked.
Oh, what about the council house thing?
The council house thing, where she bought her council house. But it is the height of hypocrisy for a man who owns 7 properties to attack her for who would have absolutely gained from his own policy, his insane policy. If there's one policy that really jumped out at me as absolutely bonkers, was cutting capital gains tax.
Right.
I mean, capital gains tax is money that is earned from wealth. It's money that's earned, you don't do anything, no productive thing that you do in order to get capital gains. You own a bit of property, it gets more, it appreciates in value. Well done. You sat on your ass in your own home. Well done. You sat on your ass and owned other people's homes. Nice one, mate. And the height of hypocrisy for him to own 7 properties and then have a go at Angela because she bought her own council house. I'm sorry. I'm trying to be less sweary, but I think got really thinking close there.
Yeah. It's an interesting one because, well, the Angela Rayner story is a separate thing. That's a kind of interesting thing that can sort of blow up at any point. I suspect that they'll try and make a thing of that during the...
They will, but this has come out of... So Ashcroft did a kind of tell-all biography, and this is the big takeaway story from it. I think they didn't find what they were looking for.
I get funny about things like capital gains tax and inheritance tax and things like that, because I sort of understand the argument you've made that it's nothing to do with you. And then I also feel like, well, it's not the government's to take away either. So I sort of get confused.
If we live in a society that needs roads and hospitals and schools, do you want to A, tax productive work more, or B, protects unproductive wealth more?
Sure. No, I understand the argument. Sure. Anyway,
you could be as uncomfortable and prissy about it as you like, but those are your choices, babe.
Sort of, yeah. Sort of. But anyway, I think the biggest take we can get away from yesterday, we're recording this on Thursday, so we had the budget on Wednesday, is that we're not having a May election, are we?
No.
Because there was not enough of a big swing for that to be happening in a few weeks' time.
No, and it just was. It was not a budget designed for pre-election sweeties and giveaways. Clearly, that will come.
Presumably.
Instantly, all the talk in the Tories turned to the autumn statement. And what the difference is between Norton's statement and the budget.
Well, now it's nothing. That's gone on for a number of years now. That's just the difference between the two is just completely evaporated.
Yeah. So fine, whatever. But
that was a bit of a Gordon Brownism, wasn't it?
Quite possibly.
I might be being disingenuous, but I think it was.
I mean, I think he did do an autumn statement, but I think they may have been quite considerably different.
Maybe.
And I think they have been changing and changing and changing.
I can't remember if it was a Brownism or an Osborneism.
But I'm not. I mean, if it was, it wouldn't shock me. I'm not going to sort of automatically jump to Gordon's defence on that because I just don't know.
While we're talking about lines in the Colomans, just to wrap up, as you'll be aware, I am, to some extent, a Penny Mordaunt fangirl. This is not new news. Have you seen her line in the Commons just before?
Defending Donnellan, yeah.
No. We've got a better one. Well, yes, I suppose that was the question. But she did come up with the line about that she thought the question was about the SNP, was talking about the SNP or no, and the Willy Wonka experience in Glasgow because it cost a lot of money and didn't work and the police were called, which I think is quite a funny line. It made me chuckle.
Yeah.
I'd only assumed, actually, that the appalling Willy Wonka experience in Glasgow had been laid on by the SNP, given its high cost, poor return, and the fact that the police were called. I mean, whoever wrote that was quite pleased with themselves.
Whoever wrote that wasn't thinking, oh, you know what? The SNP could turn around and say, mate, Boris Johnson.
Ish. It's quite a good line, I thought.
It's a good enough line. It's just not a line I would deliver as a Tory from the dispatch box.
It made me chuckle. I think it probably... She seems to be particularly good, actually, at sort of raising troop morale, Penny Mordaunt, I think.
I think that you're giving far too much credence to her ability to hold a sword for half an hour.
Oh, no, I mean, that was also impeccable. Right, well, we will be back next week where I guess we'll be seeing some fallout from the budget, if there is any. I tell you one thing that is quite interesting. There has been criticism of the budget, the kind of arguments we've made that it didn't do very much. We haven't yet seen at the time of recording, and I realise I'm slightly making myself a hostage to fortune. We haven't seen a total explosion over one policy where something completely collapses, the pasty tax thing.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how the debate goes by the time we return to the show next week.
Yeah, I mean, I there don't seem to have been those things. One of the problems that the government has with pre-briefing all of its big measures, which it really did, is that needs journalists to go, well, where's the story? And delve much deeper. So it may be that they find the story over the weekend, but we shall see.
Yep, it will certainly be interesting to see how that plays out because you do normally get something. Maybe they've managed to handle it well and there isn't anything. We will see. Emma, where can people keep up with you and your exploits?
The best thing to do is read my newsletter, which is Hard Thinking on the Soft Left on Substack. And I'm also on various social media platforms at @EmmaBurnell_.
I'm at @CharlotteAHenry across social media. And you can head over to theedition.net to find blogs, newsletters, all that sort of thing on the media and tech. Please do head over. We were joking before, but it does make a huge difference if you could head over to patreon.com/houseofcommentspodcast. As I say, £5 a month. It makes a huge difference to what we can do, particularly going into an election. We really want to up what we're doing. We really want to make sure we're providing some really feisty, female-fronted and independent coverage of all the goings-on. So it would really make a difference if you could spare that each month. If you can't, or if you can and really love us, please do leave a rating wherever you listen to podcasts because that makes a difference as well. Tell your friends. They might enjoy us here too every Friday.
Share.
Please do. Sharing is caring. And we'll see you all next week.